Okay, well, welcome everybody out. Join with Donnie. Welcoming everybody out. Those that are visiting, we're glad for your presence. In the Bible class period, I like people participating, and so we'll be looking at some of these texts. We hope that folks will jump in to help read and things like that, and participate with any comments or questions that you might have as we study here in the Scriptures. We begin our study over here in James chapter 3. In James chapter 3, in verses 9 through 12. James chapter 3, verses 9 through 12 is where we'll begin here. James chapter 3, verses 9 through 12. Someone want to read that for us? Verses 9 through 12.
With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? And a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh.
Okay, well, our topic comes from verse 10, where he says, out of the same mouth. And that is, on one hand, we're singing praises to God, and then on Monday, we're like cursing men. And James says that ought not to be. So what we're going to do is a lesson to remind us about inconsistent, incompatible, incongruent speech. If we're going to be a Christian, we need to speak like the oracles of God. We need to speak good things and right things, and not on the middle of the week that we're saying bad things. And that's just totally, absolutely inconsistent for what a Christian ought to be. And so that's our study, is just kind of to remind us about guarding our speech and guarding our mouth, and how easy it is to let the mouth get out of control and anyway, create all kinds of problems. Well, we come to the book of James. James is really a very practical book. It's been called the Proverbs of the New Testament. And indeed, there are just many practical exhortations that are to be found here in the book of James. And we'll look at a couple, three of them as it relates to our subject here this morning. Notice there in chapter 1, verse 19. Someone want to read that for us? Chapter 1, 19 there, Ray.
This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger.
Alright, so we should be swift and quick to hear, and slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Our problem is we do it just the opposite. That we are quick to get mad, and we're quick to speak, and we're slow to hear. And anyway, that's all backwards there, that we need to be very swift in listening. And not jump the gun and begin letting the mouth just run and run and run and run and get quick to and fast to get mad and angry and just blow up. But that's kind of the way it is. It's kind of an interesting observation I read several years ago. It's like, how many mouths do we have? We have one, and how many ears do we have? Well, we have two. And the observation was, well, we probably ought to be doing twice the listening as we do the speaking. Problem is, we do a lot more speaking than listening. But the text tells us that we need to be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath. All right, let's notice another verse here in chapter 1. In James chapter 1, now in verse 26. James chapter 1, number 26. Someone want to read that for us?
If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless.
Alright, so James says we have to bridle the tongue, and if we fail to bridle the tongue and we just let it loose and we just speak whatever's on our mind without thinking and studying and such as that, well, he says that a tongue that's unbridled is that, well, we deceive our own hearts. And what about our religion? It's useless. It's vain. I mean, we may tote our Bibles around and look real religious and throw out a, well, if the Lord wills, and hallelujah, and we're praising God. You know, but if our tongue is not under control, it's just an empty, useless religion. And so that's a pretty bold statement, but that's what James said. Now we come to chapter 3 in verses 1 through 12. It is the longest discussion that I know of about the tongue. Very long discussion here. And so that's where we begin as we come now to chapter 3. And let's notice some things that James has to say here in James chapter 3. Alright, he talks about here in the first part of the chapter, he talks about the tongue. It's a very small member, but it is very powerful. It's very mighty. Very small member, very small percentage of body weight, but it is a very powerful thing, as James talks about. Alright, let's notice verse 1. Verse 1. Someone want to read that for us? Verse 1.
My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that you shall receive a stricter judgment.
All right, so he says, be really careful. If you're going to be a public teacher, you need to be really, really careful. Because the tongue has influence. And if you're up before a group of people, like whatever we have here in the Bible auditorium class this morning, you know, 60 people, whatever, what I say can be influencing 60 people. And that's why you need to be careful in being a teacher, because you're going to influence a lot of people and you're going to receive a stricter judgment. More is going to be expected. I recognize that, but that just goes with the territory. And so be cautious about being a teacher. Then notice number 2, verse 2. Someone want to read verse 2?
For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well.
Alright, so James talks about in this verse that if we can find the strength and the wisdom and the disposition in controlling the tongue, well, we'll be able to control the whole body. If we can have the fortitude and looking to divine wisdom and controlling the tongue, we'll be able to control the whole body, James talks about. Then in verses 3 through 5, he uses 3 illustrations, which is quite interesting, to show things that are small but very powerful. All right, there in number 3, in verse 3. Someone want to read verse 3 for us?
Indeed, we put fish in horses' mouth that they may obey us.
Alright, first off, he uses the illustration of the horse's bit and a horse. Now, how much would an average horse, a riding horse, weigh? How much do you think? Average riding horse. Alright, 1,500 pounds, somewhere along there, maybe 1,200, maybe 14, maybe 15. But anyway, here you have this horse. I mean, it weighs way over 1,000 pounds. And then you put a horse's bit in his mouth. Now, how many pounds does a horse's bit weigh? How many pounds are we talking about? I ain't talking about a pound. I'm talking about less than a pound. And you take that horse's bit, and you put it in his mouth, and you tug the left, and that horse, 1,500 pounds, 1,400 pounds, whatever, and he'll go off to the left. And you put that bit in that horse's bit in his mouth, and you pull the right, and that big old horse, he just obeys it, and he just goes off to the right. And you just pull back, and what happens? He stops. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Here's this little horse's bit weighing less than 1 pound. I guess if you take the reins, and maybe you get a pound, pound and a half, if you count all that. But the actual bit in the mouth weighs less than 1 pound, and you have influence over this 1,200 pound animal. It's an illustration of something very small, but very powerful. Verse 4. Someone want to read verse 4 for us? Verse 4.
Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder for every top of his
eye. Alright, so now you talk about a sail ship in the first century. And how much would a sail ship, a cargo ship, weigh in the first century? How many tons, you think, maybe? I'm guessing maybe 20 tons. So that's a lot of weight, 40,000 pounds. So you got a 20-ton ship. And you got to think also, those sails, when they are elevated, the wind blowing against it, well, that's even more pounds of force that's involved with that sail ship that weighs 20 tons or so. And I don't know if you ever carry something like a board or something that's kind of big and it's windy. What happens? I mean, you can feel the force. It's like, whew, on a real windy day, you're driving your car and you're like, whew, if it's a crosswind, your car starts rocking. I mean, the wind has a lot of power. But then he talks about the rudder of the sail ship. In the first century, a sail ship, 20 tons maybe, and a rudder. How much would a rudder weigh? 10 or 15 pounds? Well, my guess is probably a pretty thick piece of wood. Might be covered with metal. I'm guessing 50 pounds, maybe 85 pounds. I don't know, somewhere in there. We'll just we'll be really generous. We'll say it weighs 100 pounds. Maybe it's this tall and this wide, big thick piece of board, and maybe covered with metal or something. I don't. We'll just be generous. We'll say 100 pounds. But here's this rudder that weighs 100 pounds, and here's the ship that weighs 20 tons, 40,000 pounds. And yet when the pilot, he turns the steering wheel and it moves that rudder, well, off it goes. The ship goes off to the right. And he turns it and off it goes to the left. I mean, something very small, but yet very influential is what James points out. All right, verse 5. Someone want to read verse 5 for us?
Even so, the tongue is a little member of those great things. He has greater force, a little fire can
have. All right, so the third illustration he uses, he says, behold how great a fire or force a little fire kindles. Now, to start a forest fire, how many boxes of matches are we talking about that we need? How many boxes, you think? Wow, we don't even need boxes. We don't even need one box, just one single little matchstick. You get a fire started and it can burn hundreds, thousands of acres. Here in Kentucky, it just usually burns the undergrowth, that is the dead leaves and branches out west, and the evergreen trees, when it's really dry in the summer, it just consumes all these trees. And just tremendous. But just a very small fire can burn a whole forest that weighs thousands of tons total. So, again, something very small, but very mighty. Now, he says there in the first part of verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Now, what would an average adult male weigh? 200 pounds. Some of us are a little smaller than that, but we'll say 200 pounds. Now, here you take an adult male weighing 200 pounds or whatever, and if you took the tongue and way down into the roots, how many pounds are we talking about the weight of the tongue? Probably less than a pound, be my guess. I never cut out a tongue, but you sort of look at the tongue, but it kind of goes way back, kind of the back part of your throat there. But we'll say 1 pound. Probably a little less. I don't know. Never cut one out. Same cow tongues, you know, they sell them. But that's not permitted on my diet, so I'm not an expert on cow tongue. But, you know, a cow tongue's bigger. But here's the point. Here's a tongue that weighs maybe a pound, and here's an adult that weighs 200 pounds. You're talking about a half a percent of body weight. And the point is that James is making that here you've got something really small, but tremendously influenced. That's a tremendous influence, very influential, is the point that James is making. And so he's giving us this exhortation to think about. You would think, well, it's just a small part, and so it's not that big. No, it is a big deal. It's very influential. And we're just trying to remind ourselves about guarding our tongue. All right, number 6. Number 6. Someone want to read number 6 for us?
And the tongue is fire, that very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members is that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life. And
it's set
on fire by hand.
All right, so it says the tongue is a fire. Now, when we think about fire can be something useful, beneficial. On the other hand, you think about fire, can be destructive. What would be some useful ways when you think about fire? Yeah, being warm in the winter, don't have to worry about that now. Be a little cool. Well, the forecast is around 56 tomorrow night, so that'll be pretty cool and pleasant. A touch of fall. But when it's winter, wow, the fire feels good. It warms your house. And then, who likes to eat raw chicken? People eat sushi, which is raw fish. But that's not really permitted on my diet either. Anyway, but, you know, we use fire. We cook our food, and it's good, and it's hot, and delicious, and etc. What other ways do we use fire for a good way? Just look up in the ceiling. What do we have? We have lights. Most of the electricity is generated by the burning of coal or gas. And so we have electricity, which is tremendously useful. How did we get here this morning? We drove here, the internal combustion engine, which uses fire burning gasoline in the engine that propels the motor to turn, and the motor goes to the transmission and the wheels turn, and we get here very convenient, useful, good uses of fire. But then on the other hand, fire can be bad. Like what? Burn the house down. Church building burned down. Yeah, you get burned, your clothes burn, you're in the hospital because fire, destructive, it's out of control and not in the right place and creates a lot of harm and pain. And so that's the way it is with the tongue. Can be very useful, very constructive, beneficial, or it can be very damaging and destructive as a fire. He says it's a world of iniquity. That is the own little biosphere of iniquity and lawlessness is the idea of the word iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body. Very small member, but it just pollutes the whole body because the tongue out of control creates all kinds of problems. And then he says, sets on fire the course of nature or the course of life. Anybody have a marginal reading on that? That's kind of interesting. There in verse 6. Pardon?
Existence.
All right, existence. The marginal reading, when it says the course of nature, the course of life, is the wheel. Literally, it's the idea of a wheel. Now, you think in the first century of a wagon wheel, a chariot wheel with spokes, you know, it has all these spokes. Well, it's interesting that James talks about the course or the wheel of nature. When you think about the wagon wheel with all those spokes, well, we have the total possibility. We have five human relationships. What are they? Human relationships with human beings. What are our relationships? All right, we have spiritual, that is related to the church. Then we have family. We have family. All right, there's the second one. What do we do Monday through Friday? We go to work. We got work responsibilities. We live in what? In a community. So we have social responsibilities. And then what's the other one? Powers that be? Government. Exactly. There you have the five possible relationships that we sustain. And a tongue out of control can create fire in the family. A wagging tongue. You know, vicious words. Hurtful words. You know, you ever heard that saying, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me? Is that true? No, it's not really true. It may not break a bone like a stick or a stone, but words can hurt, and they can hurt bad. And it creates a tremendous amount of pain. And so all five relationships, you get at work, and somebody blah, 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 next thing you know, you got fellow employees just mad at one another, and everybody's all in an uproar and a tears. Why? Well, because the tongue's a fire. Any of the wheel of nature, the wheel of life, it can set a fire because it's totally out of control. All right, let's notice on number 7-8. 7-8. Someone want to read 7-8 for us?
Where the kind of beast and bird, a reptile and creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. Is an unruly evil full of deadly
fruit. Alright, so James talks about number 7 about how different birds and animals and sea creatures and etc. have been tamed. Last year ago, January, we got to go down to visit our son Aaron and his girlfriend down in Orlando area, and we got to go to SeaWorld and watch those killer whales or orcas perform, and seals and porpoises, and just magnificent. The orcas, they're tremendous, tremendous animals. The contrast of the black and white, they're just beautiful, beautiful animals. But anyway, they've been tamed. And they perform all these tricks and what have you. And so James talks about all the various animals that have been tamed. But then he says, but the tongue can no man tame. It's unruly evil, full of deadly poison. But that raises the question, what we saw back in chapter 1. Says, if any man among you seems to be religious and bridles not his tongue, he deceives his own heart, and his religion is vain. So is this like a contradiction? I mean, can no man tame? I mean, how do we harmonize the two verses here? How would you harmonize these two verses? Chapter 1, it says, We must bridle the tongue, but then in chapter 3 he says the tongue can no man tame.
It has to be constantly monitored. It has to be constantly oversaw. Kept under control.
Exactly. You got to constantly keep it under control. It's kind of like if you go to the zoo. Now, in the summertime, a lot of the animals in the zoo do what? Nothing. Sit around the shade and pant. That's about all they do. Now, you go when the air is crisp and fall. I mean, boy, they're just like pacing. But these animals are under control. How are they controlled? Okay, they have molds, they have plexiglass, they have fences, they have electric fences. Various things control the animals. Now, if you throw open the door, what might happen or might not happen? They might not come out, but can you trust them? No, you can't trust them. You can't think that, you know, they're tame and they're going to always be nice and pleasant and not do anything crazy. What was it? I don't know. Maybe a month ago or so, one of the zoos, I think it was a jaguar or some sort of big cat, got out and like killed 4 or 5 animals. I mean, it was just pouncing on these various animals before they tranquilized it and got it contained back in. But that's what we're talking about, the tongue. No man can tame it. That is, that you can just put confidence that's always going to be gentle and nice. It doesn't happen. And so he says that we've got to bridle it. Just like that animal. You know, you put it in the cage, you keep it under control. It's okay. You've got it under control. And so there's got to be that constant vigilance about the tongue. It's really easy for it to just, you know, throw the stick shift down and drive and off it goes. Well, no. You've got to keep that thing under control. He says it's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. I think about these animals in the zoo. When it's cool, wow, they're just, you know, parading back and forth and pacing back and forth, and they're just looking, and if the door got open, you know, they're just ready to jump out of there and pounce on some animal or even person. And that's the way the tongue is. It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. You think about a snake and those fangs coming out and putting poison in some animal or creature or person. Well, that's the way the tongue can be. It can use very sharp and biting words. It can be like a dagger. It can be like an arrow piercing the heart and create a lot of hurt and pain. All right, then finally there in that verses 9 through 12, he talks about these inconsistencies where we began. He says, with this, bless we God, even the Father, and with this curse we men who are made after the similitude of God. What are we doing this morning? What are we going to be doing when we pick up our hymnals? Well, we're going to be praising God. We're going to be praising God with our tongue, with our lips, with the capacity to speak and to talk. And so we'll be speaking and praising and blessing God, that is to speak well of God. But then Monday, we go to work and we get upset with somebody and we curse. What does curse mean? Talk bad, talk evil. That is, we wish evil. You know, sometimes we think of cursing or cussing. Well, just as long as we don't use damn and hell in some profane way, we can say whatever we want to somebody. Well, that's not so. You know, love means goodwill. We want good for somebody else. And so we really get upset and, well, we're not going to use damn and hell because we know that would be wrong. But then we say, well, I hope you fall down and break your neck, buddy. Hope you wreck your car today, and that suits you well enough. But what are we doing? We've cursed them. We're not speaking well. And when we talk to other men like that. And so he points out that men are made in what image? In the image of God, the similitude of God. I mean, we can't curse God and speak evil of God. Well, why do we think we can speak evil or curse men? Well, that's totally inconsistent. He says, out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. He says, my brethren, these things ought not so to be. You can't use the same mouth on Sunday and praising God and we join in the song service and amen at the prayer and da-da-da-da. But then on the flip side, we go to work or we go down to Walmart's. That's the... Okay. Just a little little joke there. Okay, we go down to Walmart and we get upset because somebody like jumped in front of us in line, and we get really mad, and so we just blah 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 and just bless them out. Well, no, that ought not to be. So my brethren, these things ought not so to be. Then he gives some illustrations of this idea of inconsistency. He says, does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? You go to, you know, you ever go out hiking somewhere out in the woods and you come up upon a spring and it's got really good water. And if you go on Wednesdays or you go on Thursdays, it's got really bad water. Is that the way it works? Oh, if it's good water, it's good water. One year I was traveling across Kentucky to go over to Glasgow, where my in-laws used to live, and stopped at Sulphur Wells, Kentucky. Let me tell you, it's still sulphur water. And it stinks. And if you taste it, it tastes bad. Well, in my opinion. But anyway, that's another story. But it does. It smells like rotten egg. It has that strong sulfur smell and all that. But it's just constantly bad. It just puts out that bad, stinky water. It doesn't change. Then he uses the illustration in verse 12. Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Can you go out to the fig tree and try to gather up some olives? No, it didn't happen that way. Can you go to the grapevine and say, well, I'm going to pick me a little mess of figs? No, that's not going to happen. So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? And so that's his whole point. It's just totally inconsistent. And so just an exhortation for us to guard our speech. All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time, and so we're not going to be able to talk about all these in great detail, but there is a lot of verses that talks about various transgressions with the tongue, the many sins of the tongue. I blasphemy. What is blasphemy? Pardon? To speak against. In particular, what? We're speaking against God. We're speaking against the things of God. We're speaking against His church. We're speaking against His Son. We speak against His Word. That's blasphemy. We speak words contrary to the Word of God. And certainly a wicked use of the tongue. Murmuring. Murmuring is what? Yeah, it's complaining. It's kind of a low mutter complaining. It's a word in grammar. It's called onomatopoeia. Anybody remember onomatopoeia? Okay, onomatopoeia is that the word sounds like the definition. The plane zoomed overhead. The bee buzzed. See, the word buzz sort of sounded like the bee buzzing around. And murmuring is like, it's onomatopoeic. That is, it sort of sounds like what it means. It's kind of that low, it's complaining, but sort of low muttered complaining. You have actually two types of complaining. Ah, for crying out loud. You know, we're kind of just very loud and vocal, and then it's like then we sort of complain more in silence and kind of under the breath. That's murmuring. And then slander and gossip would be what? Talk about somebody in a bad way to put them down. Has a malicious intent. You talk about slander and gossip a lot of times. In fact, probably most of the time, it's something false. But there are, I think in the book of Daniel, there's a good example where they murmur against Daniel, but what they were saying was actually the truth. But there's always in murmur and slander a very malicious intent to do harm, because malice is to have ill will. And so the words are spoken, even something that may be true, but spoken really to hurt and to maim, is the concept of slander and gossip. You have backbiting, this is slandering behind the back. And you have whispering, that's sort of kind of the secret slandering, as you kind of talk about somebody in a more private, secret way, because you're really not trying to help them. It's not merely just talking about somebody else. Or talking about somebody else and some particular problem, because if there's love, there's sometimes you've got to talk about situations and two people to try to rectify the problem. But there's always that malicious intent, slander and gossip. All right, jesting, foolish talking, it's talked about in Ephesians 5. What would that be? Wrong to joke around? No, what he's talking about is kind of that off-color, moronic talk. That has the sexual innuendo in the talk that's described there. And then swearing. What does the Bible say about swearing? Swearing not at all. It's not necessary. Because Christians are going to do what when it comes to truth? Don't tell the truth. That's simple point of the matter. Flattery, sort of trumped up praise. Not really sincere and genuine. It kind of has a base motive to it. Boasting, which is bragging. We want to brag. What should we brag about? Let's brag about God. That's a lot to brag about when you talk about God. Lying, just not telling the truth. If you're going to be a good liar, what do you need to be a good liar? A good memory. You're going to need a good memory because you've got to remember, well, did I tell see a lie or did I tell the truth? And so you got to remember all these events that you told lies, so it's just a lot easier just to always tell the truth and keep up. Because liars always catch up with themselves. Filthy communications, just dirty talk, dirty words. You know, those four-letter words we're not supposed to say and not loud on TV. Foreign languages, they have their own set of dirty words. Mocking and scoffing. There are a few exemptions to that, like Elijah mocking the prophets of Baal. Cannibalism, that's what Paul talks about in the book of Galatians chapter 5. Biting and devouring one another, bad. Bitterness, that is, you have bitter hearts, so bitter words come out, and etc. Cursing, we talked about that, and that is speaking or wishing evil upon somebody. Wrath and anger, that is, we get mad and we blow up and we're out of control. We're going to give somebody a piece of our mind. We keep giving people a piece of our mind, what's going to ultimately happen? We don't even left. We're not going to have any mind. So, wrath and anger. Alright, so James points out that if we claim to be a religious, a follower of God, a church-going man or woman, and are doing what James says, let's spell it out. It's pretty funny. Of course, you got to be old enough to remember typewriters. Now we got computers, so that don't make all that typing noise. But James says your religion thing. That's it. So don't try to say, well, yeah, I go to church. Yeah, I eat the Lord's Supper every first day of the week and everything's hunky-dory. It's not. If you're not controlling the tongue. So always need to remind yourself. Any questions or comments here? All right, I think our time's up. Thank you very much for your participation.